So I have this friend. His name is Michael Mackey, and I've known him since my first job in Des Moines, Iowa. Long time ago, I'll say it. Okay. My kids call him Crazy Uncle Michael for a variety of reasons, but he is really creative. He's a writer, he is a TV editor, and his claim to fame is that he was a finalist to get onto The Real World, but then he didn't make it on the show.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. So sad.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. He's one of those, but the thing about Michael that I love is he's one of those people who he meets friends and they stay friends. Hmm. And like decades later, he still is in touch with you, and that is why we are here today. Today's guest is a guy named J.C. Fisher, and if you were into reality TV, you probably know him as one third of the Texas Tenors, three impossibly gifted singers and good-looking singers. I'll put it out there, ladies, who competed about 10 years ago on America's Got Talent. And now they're back on that new thing they're doing, America's Got Talent, the champions, where they get all the people who actually know what they're doing as performers, and they get them together and they pit them together. So I met JC online through my friend Michael. And the backstory in that, you could not make up. So I'll tell you that in the show. So 10 years later, Texas Tenors are now the third most successful act to come out of AGT. They've done 1,300 concerts over 10 years. I know, amazing, right? 4 studio albums, 2 PBS specials. They have 4 DVDs that are out. They even wrote a kid's book. Everyone writes kids' book. I love that.
So we got to get our own PBS special.
We do. Put that on the list of things to do. So I'm dying to ask JC about how they turned what was a fourth place finish 10 years ago into a completely legit career. And listen for JC's advice for anybody who's thinking about auditioning for something like AGT. Because his advice is going to be go for it. And he's going to tell you why. He's joining us from the road. He is in, I'm not kidding, the breakfast bar of a roadside hotel. How performer is that? Here is Texas tenor J.C. Fisher on Dying to Ask.
I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I am obsessed with knowing how people do things. They write the book, they start the company, they go from idea to reality. I call it the art of the follow-through, and I want to know how people go from A to B. This is the Dying to Ask podcast.
J.C. Fisher, one third of the Texas Tenors. We're really excited to have you on the Dying to Ask podcast.
Thank you, Deirdre. Great to be here.
Well, you know, we are somewhat limited because of rights in terms of what music of yours we can play during the podcast. But if you spontaneously busted into song, that would totally work. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
It won't be a problem for us.
Absolutely. So if all of a sudden you start answering in an amazing singing voice, that will be okay. In fact, it's encouraged. All right. So I want to go back in time because you and I have the most random connection. And it goes back like at least 15 years ago. We have a mutual friend, and my friend Michael calls me and says, he was working at the Macaroni Grill at the time. He goes, there's this guy at work, he's another server, and I'm helping him make a tape because he wants to sing on cruise ships. And I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, there's this guy, he's got a really good voice, and his dream is to sing on cruise ships. And at the time, my friend Michael was desperate to get onto the show The Real World, which Jeff might be too young to remember. But he would always help people. Yeah, Jeff has no idea what we're talking about, JC.
No, I know of it. I know of the show.
Yeah, because what, your parents just watched it?
I know.
No. Well, my friend Michael had this knack of like helping people make these tapes to try to get onto reality shows because back then there weren't as many of them. And so our friend Michael helped you make a tape. And that was how I first heard about you. Am I remembering this story right?
You know what? The 6 degrees of Michael Mackey. Now, I think when we're talking about Michael, you definitely should flash a picture or video of Michael so you can give all the viewers just a sample of the guy we're dealing with.
Oh, let me like, tell you something. If you've ever seen Jim Gaffigan, that's what Michael Mackey looks like. Am I right?
That's right. Times 20 personality.
Times 20. Yeah, he makes Jim Gaffigan.
Never a dull moment.
Never. But that's essentially how this all started is like you're doing a side job at a Macaroni Grill.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because I went to college and a Macaroni Grill opened up right down the street. So I decided to go over there and be one of the singing waiters, and that turned into waiting tables. And then I met Michael, and he was the most charismatic guy I'd ever met. And I noticed he always made a lot of tips. So I started being friends with him. Like, how are you doing this? Because everyone loved Michael. And then I found out about his news, you know, history and his video editing. And he would always ask me to sing at his table, so we had this bright idea to put together a tape of some of my music and send it into a cruise ship, because I grew up in the Midwest, basically. I mean, and I love the ocean, and I've always thought it'd be fun to travel, so that was the whole idea. And that tape back then actually not only got me a job on the cruise ship, but got me a job singing at the Miss Kansas pageant back in 1990, whatever year it was.
I remember it was 1998.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and what happened at the Miss Kansas pageant?
Well, I mean, for fast forwarding, I met this beautiful young lady that we started dating. When we met, I noticed her and we started dating, and I went to Maine to do a summer workshop at Center Level, Maine. Lake Kezar, one of the seven most beautiful lakes in the world. But I wrote letters to her, name's Jennifer. I wrote letters to her all summer long, and then she picked me up at the airport at the end of the summer. And long story short, we're getting ready to celebrate our 15th wedding anniversary here in like 5 days. So
How about that?
Ended up happening.
And it's all due in part to the macaroni grill.
That's right.
So let me ask you, you did get this job singing on cruise ships, and how many years did you do that before the Texas Tenors came about? Because the ship actually plays a role in that as well.
Well, it's unbelievable because, I sang at the pageant. I did the cruise ship thing after this. I auditioned and my wife and I started dating, and then I went off and toured all around the world. I went to Italy for a while and I was having a blast. But when I'd come home in between my cruise gigs, we would watch America's Got Talent. And I remember in the beginning, some of these groups would get on there. I've always been fascinated with the tenor group, like Luciano Pavarotti, Domingo Carreras, the three tenors. They were the originals. They coined this idea of putting three voices together, and it was interesting. He could do harmony, and it was just nice for the listener. So I always liked the idea of country music and classical music, but you never hear that together. Like, no matter where you go, you never hear those two together, and there's nice music in all genres. So that was the whole idea. I'll get with two of my buddies, Marcus and John, and we'll record a little bit at my wife's pageant. She ended up being a pageant director, long story short, that needed entertainment. We sang a few songs. And John, in our group, he liked the idea of going on a cruise. He loved my stories about the cruise ships. So he liked the idea. So in his mind, we were making a tape to send to, like, the cruises. But we made two tapes. I sent one tape into America's Got Talent with a few names to our group. We had, like, three names. America's Got Talent saw the group, liked it, liked the gimmick of it, and liked the name the Texas Tenors, and voila!
And
we're on America's Got Talent.
So yeah. Where did you know the other two guys from?
Well, Marcus, when I got on the cruise ship in 2000, I met Marcus. He was the pop singer. I was hired as the classical singer, and it was a brand new Broadway set, scale size stages on ships, huge ships. It was a Celebrity Millennium. And we just hit it off. We became like best friends, like brothers. We got to know each other really well. And we would be in, I always noticed this, we would be in Europe, like Scandinavian countries where everyone's blonde, including our friend Michael.
Yep.
And even though everyone's blonde walking around, people would stare at Marcus. I mean, he's a very handsome dude and he's got that blonde hair and everything. And I would always be like, wow, that's pretty cool. Well, you fast forward, I'm in Kansas City doing some construction with my buddy John with this amazing voice, and the same thing, like the ladies at restaurants and like their servers would comment on his eyes and all this stuff. So
wait a minute.
I'm formulating
you and John are doing construction, and like, what's he singing that you're looking at him going, huh?
Yeah.
Like, what's he singing?
I think I'm kind of fast forwarding. Well, what happened? In a nutshell, Marcus and I performed like 3 or 4 years together on the cruise ships, and we put our solo shows together. Well, when we started doing that, he moved to LA and started acting, doing some small roles in movies. I went home, got married, started having kids, doing like 15 gigs a year on cruise ships. Well, in between, to make a little extra money, I would do real estate stuff, like, construction things, tiling, sheetrocking for my voice teacher. He owned like 100 homes in Kansas City. So he brought in a professional singer friend of his named John to help with the rehab and all that. Well, when I talked to John, his story was he had an amazing voice, but times are tough, the economy's hard, there's not a lot of opera gigs right now. So he was doing construction. Hold on a minute.
Are there ever a lot of opera gigs?
These days there may be, but it's the very small percentile that are really getting these gigs, like Domingo and some of the higher end opera singers. It's a really tough business. The whole music business in general is very, it's very difficult. And the reality shows have really opened the door for many, many artists, and it's really changed the name. The days of Garth Brooks performing at small bars around Oklahoma for 10 years before he gets noticed, those days are gone.
Yeah.
A guy like John and JC and Marcus can form a group one night and call themselves the Texas Tenors, and then the next day you've got 10 million people that know who you are. It's pretty unbelievable.
Okay, so you guys are sheetrocking.
We're sheetrocking.
What is he singing?
And John comes
in
to...
Do you remember what he's singing?
Yeah, you know what? One of the guys that worked on the rehabs would joke around, and he put a three tenor CD in every once in a while and asked me to sing along, just joking around. And I think it was maybe O Sole Mio or something. It was Carreras to me. It was the three tenors. And John came in the back room, and he started singing along. I'd never heard John sing. I heard he had a nice, heroic tenor voice. I'd never heard him. But he started singing, and it was... I could feel the vibration on my jacket. Like, he had a massive voice. And I'm a lyric tenor. I don't have a real big voice. I got a high voice. And I was just blown away by the power. And a light bulb clicked. I said, this guy needs to be, people need to hear this. He doesn't need to be doing this stuff. He needs to be performing. He needs to be using his God-given skill. And I thought the same thing about Marcus, but it took about 2 years to get the three guys together, record something, send it into America's Got Talent. And, it's just unbelievable how it all weaved itself together. It's pretty miraculous how it all happened.
So when you get onto the show, they always do those background stories, especially if they think they've got somebody really good to follow, like the bio story. Do you remember when that part of it was being done? Because to me, I would be terrified of that. Just in case the story isn't the story you really want to have out there.
Yeah, it's like the whole Texas Tenors thing, the thing that we had in common, we'd all had lived in Texas for a while. When I graduated from Wichita State University in 1999, and I moved down to live with my sister in Houston, and then I started getting all these gigs right out of Galveston, and that Marcus was doing the same thing. Well, John, he had lived in Nacogdoches, Texas for a while, and his voice teacher's from there, so we all had that Texas thing. And the name had a ring to it. I mean, something about the Missouri or the Iowa tenors didn't quite sound the same.
No.
The Texas tenors. And yeah, so I wrote that name on the tape. I also wrote Tre Voci. We thought about Tre Voci as three voices in Italian. I thought, oh, that's a nice name. That's kind of got the Italian thing. But they called right away and said, hey, we've got an audition in Houston, and we love the name, the Texas Tenors. Can you guys come down? And at this time, we had not really even put the cowboy hats and the boots and all that stuff. The tape that we sent in, we're just in cool suits and, looking, more hip. And so I told John, I'm like, hey, we better get some boots and bolos and hats. And he was like, I'm not wearing boots.
You're like, we're going to the boot barn, John.
Yeah. Well, he wears boots all the time now. And
sure,
the look
does.
Kind of worked. The whole gimmick, the whole idea was to show up looking like Yeehaw Cowboys and do like an Alabama mountain music or a country song like you'd want to hear it, and then go right into an opera aria with our boots and hats on. So that was what we did. We sang a little John Denver to start off on our audition for the assistant producers.
Okay.
And it was kind of shaky because there was about 6,000 acts in the convention center where they were holding the auditions, and it was really loud. I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear a thing. But we kind of sang, kind of got through it, and the producers were like, do you have anything else? And then John went into full-on an opera aria, and we harmonized with him, and then the producers start shaking their heads and talking, and then the next thing we know is like, hey, we'd like you to sing for our judges, David Hasselhoff, Piff Morgan, so it was like, it's crazy how it happened, and then we got on the show, And we sang that for the crowd. We sang Mountain Music. We actually got that song at the very last second. We never had sung it before. We got on the stage. We all knew it, and we figured we just hit some harmonies. And there was no sound check or anything. So we literally got the song, and about an hour later, we're at the Opera House in Houston for like 4,000 people. They had it packed in there, and we came out singing Mountain Music, and we'd never sung it together as a group, not one time.
Unbelievable.
That was crazy.
And then you flash forward, and in season four, you come in fourth place. 10 years later, you're on America's Got Talent, the champions, as the third most successful act to ever come off the show. We want to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about what's happened in those 10 years, what it's like to have life on the road. You've done more than 1,000 performances at the Texas Tenors. John's now wearing boots and he's not fighting you on that. That's good too. Will you sing just a little bit as we go into the break? Anything you want.
Let's see. What style? Come on, give me
some. I want some country.
Country?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm from the farm. It's kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy like McCain Hack. It's early to rise, early in the sack. Thank God I'm a country boy.
We're back with J.C. Fisher from the Texas Tenors right after this.
First on the scene.
Flames ripped through a Modesto business.
First with the facts.
And one suspect is in custody.
So you're first to know. KCRA 3 News at 4.
Your first chance to get up to speed.
We are the people and we are the power.
To learn what's happening right now.
Another spot fire breaking out across Highway 20.
And to help you prepare for what's next.
When it happens in Northern California, get it first at 4 from the team you trust. KCRA 3 News at 4, where the news comes first.
All right, JC, I'm just curious. After everything started getting rolling and you guys started living the musician's life, what was that like, just being on the road all the time after all your success?
Well, it was pretty unbelievable to start out small. Like, we're a self-produced group, so that means we don't have a label. We do everything in-house. Like, I do all the when I got on the ships, I learned how to do video editing, and I got a couple of video programs, so I started doing all that for my show. And then once the Texas Tenors took off, I started doing all the video and putting that together and the band stuff. John started doing all like the handling the money and the contracts and all that. Marcus started doing the social media and the guest relations stuff, like the relations with the theaters and you name it. Now he's our travel agent. Like, we do everything for the house. Yeah. We always joke around. We have this joke, but we think it's true. We think we're the most successful group that you've never heard of. But now, because we like, if you look on the Billboard charts, we've had tons of our albums have been in the top 10 of the classical crossover, the classical, even the Broadway Billboard now. Like, Billboard magazine's writing about us. And if you look up these artists, every single one of them have a label. They're big labels like Sony, RCA, Arista, Capitol, and then our name's the Texas Tenors. Our label, the Texas Tenors. Of course, there's guys like Garth Brooks that had a label but then broke off, and but he was already famous and huge. We're trying to carve like a new path with becoming successful, traveling, and doing all of it on our own without the help of a label. And it is hard. But
is
thanks to
show,
like, America's Got Talent, like, that gives us, you know, the visibility that there's no way. If I had $1 million right now and I said, I want to get some marketing and publicity, I couldn't buy what America's Got Talent gave to us with $1 million. You know, but that's basically what a label does. But we're able to travel all around the country and do like 120 shows a year and market ourselves through social media and keep touring and keep going back. And the key to it is just do music we love and treat people nice and just have fun. And we're all really good friends. And I mean, maybe this is another subject, but our band is unbelievable. We're all like really tight. We travel with 10 people now. We started with just the three of us. Now we have a lighting, an LD. We have our sound technician. We've got our 4-piece band that we travel with. It's just, we just enjoy what we do. And then no matter where we go, we get invited back the next year to do our other show. Like, if we did our patriotic show, we come back to do our classical show. We come back to do our, you know, gospel show. I mean, it's just unbelievable being able to return to all these places and do shows year after year and keep busy and keep supporting our families.
You know what's so interesting to me is that you're doing this without having like the big label behind you, but like Billboard magazine just named you the number 10 classical crossover artist. You've done 1,300 concerts in those 10 years. You've had 4 studio albums, 2 PBS specials. There was one month when every time I flipped onto PBS, you were on. I was like, is it like the JC channel this month? It was, I mean, amazing. And I would think that that's really creating some really interesting possibilities for other people who are coming off of shows like AGT. They're probably seeing what you guys are doing.
Well, hey, I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm not going to name them all, but I've actually myself like kind of pitched 4 or 5 of my friends that are really talented that I met throughout like working on ships and working places, said, you'd be really good. You should audition. Well, we don't know. Well, like my friend Charlie Peacock, he's a juggler. He asked me one day in a text, he's like, how'd you do that? And I was like, hey, send me your tape. I sent it. He got on America's Got Talent. He made it to like, you know, the semifinal round. You know, there's like 4 or 5 of our friends that because of this platform, we were able to send a tape in, and they realized, wow, these people are really talented, and they got on a show, and there's no way they could have done that without, you know, this huge platform that, you know, millions of people watch. So it's an unbelievable opportunity.
It is when it works out well, for sure. You
know? Yeah.
And then you have some people who maybe they don't handle it so well. So I'm curious to know, like, when you guys were on the show, you were a little bit older. So did you get any advice, or did you go in with, like, three like minds on here's how we're going to handle the opportunity that comes out of this?
What do you mean, Rolda? You see wrinkles?
No.
You see your wrinkles?
No.
Yeah, no, I got you. I'm with you 100%. You know, it's great. It is unbelievable to see, you know, to see how we've seasoned ourselves. You know, we started out, and to me, I mean, I grew up on a farm. We've got, my dad's a farmer. We've got cattle. You know, I'm used to wearing cowboy boots and hat and stuff. And we just kind of looked like good old boys when we got on America's Got Talent. But through our travel, and our wardrobe went from, you know, basically the Goodwill secondhand stores to John Barbados. And so we've upped our game as far as that, but we have gotten older, but I think it's been a positive thing. And it's, what was your question?
I don't know, but I like the way the conversation's going. I mean, it seems like you guys have really been able to kind of ride this really well. What are the challenges to being out on the road so much? Like, how do you keep your voice fresh? And how do you, when you're doing a lot of the same songs, how do you keep the performance fresh? What are the things you've learned along the way?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the thing, you know, sorry, I'm going to flip this. That's one of the things, like, we people, like, they want to hear new music constantly, and we're constantly working on original stuff, and we have original songs, like our Boot Daddy's really getting a lot of attention.
How does Boot Daddy go?
You saw the Boot Daddy video?
I haven't seen that yet, no.
Oh, it's pretty cool. Yeah, we filmed a full-on Boot Daddy video in a country bar in Springfield, Missouri, and
fun.
Had a great time. Had some of our friends there. They were all dancing on the bar like Coyote Ugly. It was awesome. It's like an upbeat two-step. You have to check that out. And then I've got, like, a Christmas song that I wrote on my way home from a Christmas show about my family and how I grew up. It's called Favorite Time of Year. And that's gotten a lot of recognition at Christmas time. But that's the thing. We've got a group of fans called the Texas Tenorettes. And
I've heard about the Tenorettes.
You have. Well, when we started in America's Got Talent 2009, I made a Facebook page for the Texas Tenors. We had eight friends, eight likes. It was all our family.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I was asked to join it. Just to, like, add a little on. This is how long we've had this, like, Facebook connection going, but go ahead.
That's so funny. Well, I've heard about you for 20 years, so it's nice that we're finally catching up and meeting.
Yeah.
But now we have, fast forward 260 or 70,000 fans later, our small group of ladies called the Tenorettes, they started out small. Now there's like 600 or 700 of them that travel around to most of our concerts. Like tonight in West Virginia, we'll probably have at least 50 or 60 of the fans there. Next week, we're doing a charter cruise, our like fourth or fifth charter cruise, and it keeps growing in number. It's so much fun, and they want to hear new music. But when we're on the road, we're constantly busy and we're setting up, and it's hard to get that time together just to record. And a lot of groups, what they'll do is they'll travel 4 to 6 months, and then they'll take 4 to 6 months off and literally spend 2 or 3 months in the studio. Well, we travel year round. We don't have time to sit down in the studio. We have families. Like, I've got soccer games, basketball games, the kids.
Right.
We don't have time for that. You know, we're a different style of group. You know, a lot of groups, when they started, you know, having their van, pulling their luggage around, and they do a show every weekend. Well, we kind of skipped that. We went from starting out to taking a bus and doing a few gigs and then going home and spending time with our family. But to support everyone, we can't just do, you know, 30 or 40 shows a year. We need to do like 100 shows a year. But that means getting pretty tight with our schedule and figuring out what we're going to do. But what we really need to do is add in 2 or 3 months of like recording so we can get our new albums and our new music. We got tons of new music, but it's just a matter of sitting down to get it recorded.
How do you protect your voice?
Oh, the voice. Well, you know, it's just, I never got too crazy about that. A lot of people, like, will, you know, drink certain things. I never did that. I'm kind of a healthy person. I just physically, like you, I see you take care of yourself. You work out. I just kind of take care of myself. I exercise. I eat pretty healthy. So the voice just kind of follows the body on that and just stays healthy. And when we're singing often, we don't really have to warm up a lot because we're constantly singing. You know, it's kind of like if you're you work out every day, you know, your body's going to be feeling pretty good. You take a few months off, then you notice it. That's how the voice is.
Did some of that come from working on cruise ships? Because it's not like you can really take a night off on a cruise because you can't, like, stay home. You know, like, people are there. It's Thursday night. They're ready for the show. What are some of the things you learned being on the cruise ships that maybe, like, have influenced you as a performer?
Well, the cruise ships are unbelievable because you're in front of a captive audience that has no idea who you are. So you're not,
and they can't go anywhere.
Yeah, you're not like if Garth Brooks, ladies and gentlemen, Garth Brooks. If Garth Brooks comes out, he can do whatever he wants. People are going to love him because they know who he is. I had to come out, J.C. Fisher, the romantic tenor.
And, is that what you're called?
Yeah, that's what my Marcus. Marcus says, "Oh, you have family and wife. You're so romantic. Please pop the romantic tenor." Well, and it kind of worked out because I come out and I do this whole Italian bit, and people thought I was Italian.
Okay, lay a little on us. I want to hear it.
Oh no, that's all. I don't want to embarrass myself because it's funny because it's been like 10 years, and my Italian's probably gone out the door since then. But what I would do is I'd come out and do a little bit that I had like memorized, and then I would go right into like good old country. Missouri boy,
right.
And I had country music. The people liked it, and the grandmas thought it was just endearing, and it worked great. But you had 50 minutes to win over a full theater that you've never met before, and you're playing with a band that's just played your music like the day of, like an hour rehearsal. So if you can make that work and you can make those people like you, then you can pretty much, if you've got three guys and you've been on a reality show, you can pretty much add to your fan base pretty quick. So I don't know if that answered the question or not. But.
Oh, it did. I think you figured it out. That's for sure. We're going to take another break. And then when we come back, I'd love to know your advice for people who are hearing this and thinking, all right, he says this was the platform that launched the whole thing. So your advice for people who maybe have that talent, have that drive, and are willing to take that chance. Will you sing us into one more break? Anything you want. 10 seconds. Anything you want.
Love for me. Darling, just dive right in, follow my lead. I found a girl, beautiful and sweet. I never knew you were that someone waiting for me.
And for those who are listening right now, the one thing I got to let you know is JC's joining us from the breakfast room in a hotel. Those are the luckiest guests ever in that hotel.
Yes.
All right, we're back with more Dying to Ask right after this.
4 a.m. It's a new day. Okay, so the roosters aren't even awake yet. But KCRA 3 Morning News is. If it happened overnight, Deirdre, Teo, Tony, and Ty have got it covered. Tamara's forecast is so accurate, your day practically plans itself. And Melody monitors the roadways so you always have the best routes to work. It may be too early to see the sun, but you can always see the 3 and get the 3. News, weather, traffic. KCRA 3 from 4 to 7, where the news comes first.
How did a kid who grew up in the Midwest on a farm get interested in opera?
Well, it's a pretty cool story. You know, I was in the sports. I love basketball. And we had a really tight team from our kindergarten till our senior year in high school. My junior year in high school, we were like 30-2 on our sophomore year. And our junior year, every Friday night, the gym would be packed. And the kids would come over from the choir and sing the national anthem. And sometimes it just wasn't. I told my principal, I said, next Friday night, I'm going to sing the national anthem. And she was kind of surprised. She's like, well, do you even sing? And I said, well, I sing in church, but I'll sing tomorrow or Friday night. So the next Friday night, I sang the national anthem. And I guess the crowd went crazy. As my mom tells, as a matter of fact, someone asked her, did you know your son could sing like that? And she said, I had no idea. And this is my junior year in high school. So what was kind of pivotal is Mr. Beasley, our choir teacher, came to me after the game, said, listen, JC, you'd be wasting your God-given talent if you didn't sing and you didn't use that. You should be in choir. So I was like, all right, sign me up. So the next Friday night, I sang it with three other of my buddies on the team, and we're all out there in our uniforms, and I guess the blend was just great. And people just went crazy. All four of us got in choir, and that's when it started. And in my senior year, I learned an Italian art song and went to state and got a one. And then I went to state choir. And then I started thinking, maybe there's something to this. Maybe I can do this beyond just, you know, having fun singing in church or singing karaoke or whatever. And I went to college and just went up to the choir professor and auditioned, and I got a scholarship, and I ended up being the concert chorale. We toured around, and to get a scholarship, you had to study with a voice teacher. And Dr. Owens was her name, and she loved opera. And she asked me what I listened to, and I said, well, I listened to Toby Keith, George Strait, Garth Brooks. And she's like, oh no, you're going to listen to this. And she handed me a three tenor CD and a Pavarotti CD. So I started listening to that, and I didn't know anything about opera, but I thought it was interesting. And I was like, I wonder if I can emulate that or just try to, you know, do the, like, how's he doing? Like, you know, oh, I mean, how's he doing that? That's not natural, but it seemed like to always kind of come natural to me. I would kind of joke around and like act like an opera singer. But some people would be like, wow, it sounded like really like that. And I would just be joking around. But then I started taking lessons and started really enjoying it, and then started learning about the art, and year after year in college, just getting more into and doing operas and just really enjoying it. And that was the funny thing, because Dr. Owens, she still keeps in touch with me, and she emailed me after America's Got Talent and just saying how proud she was to see, because she remembers that little boy that liked country music and classical. And it always was tough for me, because I thought there was always a place for both of those styles in a show, but I'd never seen that before. And that was my whole idea from back in college, like combining the best music of all different genres from country to classical. As a matter of fact, our first CD was called The Texas Tenors, Country Roots Classical Sound.
Wow.
And we had country down there and classical, and it all just came together, you know, years later.
What's been the greatest thing about being able to inspire other kids who maybe were, they're in the same boat now? Because you have introduced opera to an entire generation through the show and through the touring. What's been the thing that you've encouraged maybe young singers to take from your story?
Yeah, you know, we've been fortunate to do some master classes back at our colleges and talk to students that, you know, back when I went to school, it was very strict. When you studied a language or you studied music, it was very classical oriented. But the world's going in many directions, and with pop music and social media and just everything with YouTube, different kids are being exposed to all these different styles of music, and it's just changed over the years. And like with this coming into colleges, we're able to talk to kids, like, whereas like 10 years ago, reality shows wasn't a thing, you know, that wasn't even a possibility, and people would have to go audition for a light opera program or
And truthfully, it wasn't really necessarily respected among the music industry as being like a legit place to start, but I feel like that's totally changed now.
Yeah, you know, I have guys that I went to school with that in the beginning, they'd be like, how long are you going to, you know, do this whole reality thing? And like, kind of laugh. And I'd be like, well, you know, we pretty much paid for my house with it. And we did 120 shows last year, and we won 3 Emmys, so it's not a bad deal.
It's not that bad.
But it was the validation came when last year, you know, a couple of my buddies that I sang with in college, you know, they called me up and was like, hey, if you ever need a substitute, we'd love to fill in. That looks fun. We're still in New York. We're still waiting tables, trying to make it. And we'll do whatever at this point. And I was like, you know, I just followed my gut. I felt like we had something. And there's three really cool guys. Like John and Marcus are just the best guys. And they're just so laid back and just personable. But they've got really great talents. We're all three different. And that's what I would tell anyone in college, like when you're pursuing your dream, your passion, do what you love. Like, I love listening to country music, and I also sincerely love listening to like La Boheme. I love the great tenors. I actually love both of those styles of music, and they're totally different. And how do those worlds come together? Well, they don't in any other circumstance, with the exception of something like America's Got Talent. When the Texas Tenors come out, we can do a country song, and all those country fans out there with their cowboy hats and everything can come up and say, we really loved how you did Garth Brooks. And vice versa, you know, opera season ticket holders will come up and not only talk about the opera stuff, but they'll say, you know what, we're not really country fans, but we actually really like that. So that might have been the first time a country fan came to a concert and they heard opera, and vice versa for like an opera season ticket holder. So that's the biggest compliment we get, is when a couple come up in tuxedos and she's got a nice dress on, and we just did a concert with the Cleveland Pops or whatever, Cincinnati Pops, you know, or the Houston Symphony, and they'll be like, we really liked your country section, right, your gospel section. You know, it's really cool.
It's really cool. Okay, speaking of really cool, I know we need to wrap up. How is your dad? Because I think the only other person that's more interesting in your family than you is your father. Will you explain to people what your father is known for?
Well, in 2010, we did a tour of the UK, 24 cities, and I saw this magazine article about the oldest bus driver in Europe. He had been driving a school bus for 51 years, and at the time, my dad had been driving for 60 years.
A school bus.
My grandpa drove, and my great-grandpa drove, and when my grandpa was driving back in 1946, he found it easier to let his son, my dad, at the age of 16, drive his 46 panel truck and drive the kids. They sat on milk cartons.
Wow.
They sat on milk cartons to go into school. My dad would drive the bus. You didn't need a CDL back then, anything, hardly a driver's license. But he started driving in 1946. Fast forward 66 years, he was driving the same bus route for 66 years. And I sent a letter into the Guinness Book of World Records, and they responded saying, that's amazing. Here's a full catalog to fill out to verify everything. And if you can do that, we're going to put him in the Guinness Book of World Records, longest career as a bus driver. And it's been just unbelievably exciting for me, because my dad is just the best guy in the world. He is just, everyone loves him. And he drove for 66 years, and we finally convinced him to retire, and we had a big party, several entertainers performed, and it was so much fun. But yeah, he drove a school bus from the age of 16 till about 82 for 66 years, and he would drive all the school the basketball and baseball games, and he had 18 buses in that time, and he drove over 6 million miles. We kind of figured it out.
It was just unbelievable. It's really easy to see where your enthusiasm for life and your work ethic comes from. That apple just kind of rolled off the tree. It didn't fall very far. Well, I know you guys have a lot of good stuff coming out. You've got a new album that's out, JC?
Yeah, we have a great album. We all love gospel. We all love Broadway and Americana. So we decided to put a Broadway Americana CD together with some of your favorite Broadway songs, like from Les Mis and West Side Story, Phantom of the Opera, combined with some Americana songs like God Bless America and Shenandoah's, a beautiful a cappella version of Shenandoah. It's very Americana. Great album. And it's been on the Billboard charts as well, right off the release. So go to thetexastenors.com and check that out, or iTunes or wherever.
And then we've been enjoying you on America's Got Talent, The Champions. JC, thank you so much for joining us. Our mutual friend Michael, who you met in the Macaroni Grill many, many years ago, said, he emailed me, he said, JC is without a doubt the single most charming human being I've ever met. And I have to say, after our conversation, I'm going to agree with him on that.
Well, thank you so much, dear. He's so kind. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
KCRA3, your best choice for news at 11.
Live team coverage tonight.
No Sacramento station covers Northern California better than KCRA3.
We have breaking news on that rescue.
With resources to bring you the story wherever it happens.
Get those cannons away from me!
And detailed perspectives you won't see anywhere else.
Livecopter 3 shows that fire burning.
The experience you've come to trust every night.
Here's what we know right now.
Your best choice for news at 11. KCRA3, where the news comes first.
If the Texas Tenors fans are the Tenorettes, what do you call our peeps? The Dyings?
That's a little morbid.
The Dead? The Askers?
The Askers.
Maybe the Askers.
The Inquisitors.
The Inquisitors. Yeah, look, gotta work on that too.
We do.
You can keep up with the Texas Tenors on Facebook at the Texas Tenors, on Instagram at the Texas Tenors, and you can check out their upcoming shows and maybe start your career as a tenorette. Why not? Start now at thetexastenors.com. Larissa Kepiodecki gives us a review of the week. She says, Deirdre's style as well as her interaction with Jeff. I love it.
nice.
I love it. The interaction
some
with
kind
you,
words.
Yeah, that's the easy part, I'd say. Okay, would you like to hear your name? I'll say it if you write something. Leave a review on iTunes. Our web manager, Devin, is all over us to hit 200 ratings and review. That's the new goal.
Let's do it, people.
Let's do it. Here's the deal. I'm Irish. I don't like asking for help. I don't like asking for things, but the reality is we need it. So please leave us a review. Tell your friends to listen to the podcast. That is how we grow the show, and we stay out of the boss's office. No one needs that. Reach out to us on Instagram. Where are you on Insta?
I'm at Producer Jeff.
I'm at Run Read Sip. And there's also Dying to Ask Podcast
at
on
Dying
Instagram
to Ask
as well. So check that out. And look for new episodes now on Wednesdays on iTunes, Google Play.
New launch day.
And Stitcher. I love Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Midway through the week.
Hump day.
See you next week.